you will be acutely aware that there has been a lot of loss of life on Irish roads in the past weeks and months, one tragically in this county just last week, and that the figures for the past month were up 25% on the same period last year, and the overall figure for the year so far is now 127, which is also up 25% on the same period last year. If you were watching the national television news last night, you'll have seen Susan Gray from Donegal, the founder of PARC, Promoting Awareness, Responsibility and Care. And Susan was on the 9 o'clock news last night. And as Susan pointed out, while we've lost 127 lives so far this year, the number of Gardaí assigned to road policing units across the country is 58 less than it was 2 years ago. Susan Gray, good morning.
Good morning, Dom.
Susan, the point you were making last night was that on the one hand, Drew Harris and other Gardaí are speaking very articulately, and Paula Hillman obviously as well, speaking very articulately about the need to address what's happening on our roads, but at the same time, they're actually cutting the numbers that they have working actively on them.
Yes, and it was reported that we've more Gardaí now than we had 5 years ago. That may be true, Donal, but in 2021, we had 736 members assigned to the Roads Policing Unit. They took 58 of them out, and now we have 678. Nothing will make up for Gardaí stopping somebody at the side of the road. The plans for more speed cameras are welcome, but they will never catch a drunk driver, somebody on drugs, somebody not wearing a seatbelt, or somebody using their mobile phone while they're driving. So we need the Gardaí. We need the numbers up. We need to see them. There has to be far greater visibility. We travelled 4 hours this morning. We didn't come across one checkpoint.
Even though today is National Go Slow Day. And today we're talking about Gardaí. Today is National Go Slow Day. So one would have assumed there'd be a really active presence out on the streets today.
Yes. So what they're saying on one hand, is it really happening in reality? But have they got the numbers? We fear that the Gardaí Commissioner is going down the road of technology, and using the guards for other duties. The speed vans, as I said, they're welcome, but no. There's nothing that will put the fear of God in people more than coming across a checkpoint.
And so, even, as you said, it's an important point you made, because a Garda in a car who's looking is going to see the drivers, perhaps notice suspicious behaviour. A Garda in a car is going to have much more chance of spotting aberrant activity, something that's out of the ordinary, and then perhaps pursue and stop based on a hunch. That's not going to happen with a van. A van's going to generate a computer chit that's going to send out an automatic 2 points, and however many, €80, €120, whatever the figure is, it's going to send out the fine, it's going to send out the penalty points. But ultimately, the Garda sitting in the car watching is what's going to spot potentially aberrant behaviour on the roads.
Yeah, you're totally right. So we need more guards. And we wrote to the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, in the middle of August, and he replied on the 23rd of August. And we pointed out, we outlined 8 points that need to be addressed, but we said there was more. We wanted to see more sharing, far better sharing of information. The Gardaí. We need more Gardaí on the roads, right in the roads policing units. When they're assigned and they stop somebody at the side of the road, they need first-hand information, technology at the side of the road. At present, they have not got instant access to transport driver file database at the side of the road. To identify, say, somebody driving where disqualified, they don't have the access to know the status of a driver's driving license or learner permit. That's, we've been asking for that for years and years. Equip the Gardaí properly when they're at the side of the road.
And
let them have instant access to transport driver file, and that has to be real-time information. It has to be accurate, and the Minister for Transport has to keep it up to date. So if you're stopped at the side of the road, the Gardaí with the new handheld mobility device should be able to determine if you lie or mislead them. They should have all that information about the driver on their phone. Also, the vehicle file and the driver file isn't linked up. There's a new Road Traffic Act that was passed this year, 2003. We asked the Taoiseach for ADCA to get two sections, that very important sections, commenced straight away. When an act is passed by the President, everybody assumes that that's law and it's active. No. It's commenced section by section. And the two that we want is to be commenced straight away is transport to allow all insurance companies access to their driver file to know the status of each and every license and permit in the country, and to enact or commence legislation to link the driver file. The transport has a vehicle driver file, but it's two separate files. One has all information on your vehicle, and the other one has all information on the drivers insured on that vehicle, the status of their license, etc., etc. These two don't talk to each other. We need them linked up.
Another issue you've been speaking about, Susan, and another issue you've been speaking a lot about in recent years has been the fact that even if a driver gets to court and even if an endorsement is placed on the licence in the court, if they don't physically have the licence with them, it can be the case that they can walk out of there and the licence doesn't, the endorsement doesn't get applied. Has that issue been addressed to your satisfaction yet?
No, and we believe that's why, it may be why transport's not sharing information from their driver file, because it's incomplete. They don't have all the information because they don't have the unique driver number of everybody's license. Donald stays with you your whole life. If that's not recorded and put into transport's driver file, that person, that driver, should he or she be disqualified, may not be easily identifiable for Gardaí at the side of the road. Now, we asked questions to Catherine Murphy recently on learner drivers. You know, my passion on getting the laws strengthened as far as learner drivers are concerned. And we asked how many learner drivers were disqualified in court on a said period, right? It's actually depressing to talk about. Out of all the drivers, only 11,500 approximately were disqualified, right? 722 surrendered their license to the RSA. And it's the law that you must surrender your license or your permit, or license or permit, depending on the status. Now, where are we going? Like, and in the last 6 months, a total of 2,699 learners failed to show up for their driving test appointment. But there's no legal requirement for a learner permit holder to ever set a driving test to be able to obtain a subsequent permit. The RSA knows about this since 2013, and they said they were going to put an action plan into the new strategy, and by 2014, it would be mandatory for a learner to actually turn up for their test and sit it before the RSA would issue a new permit. They're not doing that. They're not turning up. But the RSA, if they give the RSA €85 when they're applying for a date for their appointment to sit the test, they're renewed time and time again.
And it's your belief in many of these cases those learners are driving unaccompanied?
Yes, it would make the, like the Clancy Amendment came in 2018, make it an offence if you were driving unaccompanied, if you were a learner, the Gardaí had the power to seize your vehicle. But wouldn't it be far better, or would help the Gardaí system a lot, if the RSA stopped renewing learner permits, it would, without sitting the test, it would encourage learners to practice, be prepared, go and sit the test, and we're sure many of them will pass the test. Then there'd be less encouraged or felt the need to drive unaccompanied for whatever reason, and the Gardaí wouldn't be detecting as many. And it would make the Garda's job a lot easier. But we've asked Taoiseach Varadkar to look into it. Like,
you have heard a lot, and we have heard a lot over the past weeks from Paula Hillman, from the Taoiseach, from Minister Jack Chambers. It's National Slowdown Day today. Gardaí are promising a new initiative. They're promising a new focus. The Taoiseach did admit to you in his response to you that this is not a blip. And that was a significant thing to say, because it's not just an aberration that we've had an increase in road deaths this year. It's not a blip. The Taoiseach's acknowledged that. So from that point of view, have you any confidence that with all that political and policing focus on the roads over the past number of, the past fortnight, because we've had some tragedies on the roads, sadly, over the past 2 weeks. But with all that new focus on Irish roads, have you any confidence that we will actually see results, or is it going to go down the same track of well-meaning statements, but ultimately departments still not talking to each other, and as a result, the information still not available where it needs to be?
Well, all we can do is hope with the Taoiseach. Varadkar will act, and he's in charge. He's responsible for all his ministers. He's head over them. Let him have the meeting, and he said he would bring up our issues. He would write to Minister McEntee and Minister Chambers for updates on the issues that I raised, and suggest to convene a meeting of minister committee or committee on road safety, and that he might chair it. Let's hope he chairs it. Let's hope he lays down the law now and says, look at all these issues. We have laws coming out of our ears. Let's focus on the laws we have and make them watertight.
And Susan, do we know the fact that these departments aren't speaking to each other? Is it GDPR? Is it data protection? Is there a reason? Because one would have thought that if there's an endorsement on a licence, that should be registered right across the board immediately, and everyone should be able to see it from the local Garda right through to the insurance company. And if that's not the case, you're left wondering how many holes are there in the system?
Oh, there are endless as far as we believe, anyway. But,
I mean, are they claiming this is GDPR? Are they saying this is a matter of data protection? Are they giving you any reason that they're not registering this information and sharing this information between departments?
Well, Donal, this new road traffic and roads bill 2023, it was passed, and there's provisions in this to share information. So we would like to think or believe that they didn't pass, all the TVs and senators didn't pass this bill and put it into an act, knowing that they couldn't share this information because of data protection. There's two excellent provisions in this act that have to be commenced yet. So if they put them in, you would like to believe that they checked it all out, it can be shared. It's just a matter of when they're going to commence them two sections of the Road Traffic Act. There's no point putting provisions on an act and it's going to sit there forever and never be commenced. So we've asked the Taoiseach to, and the consolidation of the Road Traffic Act, that's another thing we brought up with them. Like, that's been promised for 10, 15 years. And still, we've asked them, could they update us? Where is it at now? Every Minister for Transport promises that there's going to be a consolidation of the road traffic, because there's so many laws and acts overlapping other laws, and it must be so confusing for anybody to understand where the law stands at the minute, what's the latest update. But it seems to be going absolutely nowhere. So we're putting our faith in Leo Varadkar, because he was an excellent Minister for Transport in 2011 to 2014. We worked with him. He knows exactly so much about the loopholes and the... So we have to put our faith in somebody.
Right.
This is the one, Donal, so we'll keep you updated.
Okie doke, Susan, thank you. In the meantime, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. That's Susan Gray there from Park. Susan, thank you. We're going to take a short break. Back after these. The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We spoke to Susan Gray from Park just before the break. Caller says on a Sunday we usually go for a drive, which most likely takes us through the Barnesmore Gap toward Donegal Town. I rarely, if ever, have seen a checkpoint there apart from the odd speed van. One of the biggest issues is bikers. They travel in groups and pass out traffic regardless of what's coming against them. They seem to think because they're bikers they can pass in the middle of the road with cars in both directions. Why is it that bikers seem to take so many risks and yet they're among the most vulnerable groups for accidents? So asks a caller. Now, two things that have been very much part of the national dialogue in the past couple of days has been school transport and the latest increase in petrol and diesel prices as a result of the reimposition of excise duties. Now, we are joined on Zoom this morning by Seamus Boland, who is the CEO of Irish Rural Link. And Seamus, a very good morning to you.
Good morning. I hope you can hear me. Nice to be on your show.
We certainly can. And I have to say, Seamus, it's lovely after weeks and weeks of rain and fog and mist and gunk to actually see somebody speaking to us on Zoom outside in the backyard. And it's lovely. It's lovely to see you actually do it outside.
There's a bit of sunshine. I was trying to find a quiet place as well. But there's lovely sunshine and it's quite beautiful.
It's a great link and it is great to see it. Seamus, you're making the point that in order to allow people access the school transport scheme, the requirement is they have to be at least 3.2 kilometres away from the school. You believe, given where we are with fuel costs, given where we are with the cost of living crisis, that needs to be reviewed?
Absolutely. It's an incredible anomaly and it doesn't really make sense in any type of government policy, even if you take climate change. What it means for the parents listening to your show is that they're going to have to find a way of getting their child to the school every morning, and that means another car. So straight away you need the second car for certain. It also discommodes parents where they may be two parents and both have jobs. That's a problem. This idea that somehow they can cycle and walk, well, anybody who knows the roads, rural roads, and I know Donegal very well, been up there many, many times. The roads in Donegal are no different from the roads in the Midland or anywhere else. They're not suitable for children cycling or walking. So you have to have a car. So the current policy is against safety. It is against climate change. It breaks every government policy I can think of. And we don't understand why it cannot be corrected.
We heard yesterday that there has been a problem. Well, we knew for a couple of days there's been a problem getting, in particular, pupils with special needs and disability access and so on to school because they didn't have enough drivers and they couldn't get the staff recruited in order to bring them. Now, if your call for the 3.2-kilometre restriction to be relaxed were to be adopted, that's going to mean an awful lot more school buses, both within the Bus Éireann fleet and within the private sector as well, who are then contracted out by Bus Éireann to provide the services. Are you confident they'll be able to get the buses, they'll be able to get the drivers, and they'll be able to actually put that infrastructure in place, given that from what we're hearing from Bus Éireann, the infrastructure as it stands is already creaking at the seams?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely in agreement with you there. It is creaking. And I know we're getting calls of schools with the existing criteria are informing their children or the parents of their children that they can't supply buses. So it's in a chronic state at the moment. The first thing to say is if our anomaly that we're asking to be dropped, in some cases, it certainly would mean more buses and more drivers. But also it doesn't mean it in all cases, because you do have situation where buses are passing by households with half empty buses. And so it's not necessarily a demand for greater buses. But let's get back to basics here. The whole school transport program, which comes up every year at this time of the year, and your program and many others, is the Cinderella of education. It is simply not resourced. There's no thinking going into it. And the reason we have lack of capacity, the reason we haven't the same number of buses, is because nobody actually thinks about completely reviewing it. And really, you know, it's not a good reason to do that. You can't do something good that's essential. It's not a good reason to say, well, actually, the system is so creaking, it's not able to deal with what it already has. We really need a complete rethink.
The other issue, of course, is, and you'll be well familiar with this as we are here, and as you say, yes, indeed, calls come in this time of year. You can always be pretty much guaranteed you'll get, on this show, you'll get at least a week out of school transport and on the news as well. It's pretty well guaranteed. But there's another element, because we're talking about the school transport scheme, which is something that certainly a lot of families qualify for. But on top of the school transport scheme, you also have the discretionary scheme, which is where if there is spare capacity in the fleet, then families can buy places on the bus for a set fee. And that's where it really starts to in a sense, fall apart, because, you know, you've got so much discussion on the discretionary thing, and people may have got tickets last year but couldn't get tickets this year. One member of the family got a ticket, a second member of the family didn't get a ticket. That once you move into the discretionary part of the equation, that's when it really starts to fall apart, because you're talking about what is supposedly supplementary and additional capacity. So not only do they now have to fulfil their obligations under the school transport scheme, but they've got to meet what is growing demand under that discretionary supplementary scheme.
Yeah, and the discretionary scheme, in my opinion, was always a strange one, and it was always an Irish solution to an Irish problem, and it doesn't work, and that's the problem. It just doesn't work. It's also a kind of an unequal, depending on your resources, depending on whether you can afford it or not. But the real problem here is there shouldn't need to be a discretionary scheme. For example, let's take another policy change this year. Fares were reduced on Dublin Bus, Air Nord Air and all of that. And it has made a huge difference in the way people use public transport. We have a school transport system that has so many alleyways and so many criteria attached to it that actually parents need a PhD to understand it. The discretionary system actually should go, and free transport or transport should be available to every child who wants to go, who is going to school, because it's not working, it's not workable, and it causes huge confusion. And also, you know, a child getting on the bus, one child is paying, the other isn't. There's something about that strikes to me as inequality as well. So, like, that's why that whole scheme needs serious, serious review.
As you've said, you'd need a PhD to understand the schemes. We've actually had one this morning on the programme where someone's been told, having bought the discretionary ticket, they've been told by the bus company, and this is a new one on me, I don't know if you've ever heard this one before, they've been told, we can get the child to school, but we can't get them home. Which is,
I think you're talking, we're in Fawlty Towers lands here at the moment. You know, I mean, it's making it up as you go along. It's trying to figure out something. And fairness to those stuck with it, the bus companies or even the school principals, you know, they're trying to deal as best they can with a situation that is not fit for purpose, that is broken. So it's not fair to blame them too much. But yes, I have heard that one. I've had worse. I've heard you can only be picked up twice a week, but we can't pick you up other days because we've other runs. So it's an absolute broken system. And I'm amazed that no minister is being called to account to review it and revise it and stop you having a free week of programming that you don't have to think about every year at this time of the year.
Is the problem at government level, at department level? Is it at Bus Éireann level now? Because as we understand it, Bus Éireann administer the scheme. Bus Éireann have a certain amount of capacity themselves, but the vast majority of the capacity, it seems, are private companies who are hired, as it were, through Bus Éireann to actually provide the service. So you have, you know, you have potential log jams at government level, department level, and Bus Éireann level. I mean, where does the focus need to be in terms of unpicking where the issues are and what needs to be improved?
Well, it starts at the cabinet table, whether we like it or not. The bus, the whole transport system has been basically, the responsibility has been leveraged away from everybody that should be. So the department give it to Bus Éireann. Bus Éireann don't really want to be bothered with it, so they hire it out to the private operators. The private operators have their own routes and responsibilities and also priorities. So nobody is taking charge of it. Nobody is able to say to Bus Éireann, hey, we gave you a contract. to deliver a school transport system. You can't do it, and you're now delivering it out to somebody else, and somebody else is delivering it out to somebody else. Honestly, it's like Highland Radio being asked to do a job, and you figuring out, you giving it to whoever's passing by the studio. Will you run the studio today? Because we haven't time. We have other more important stuff to do. The school transport system is really important. It has not been managed properly. It has nobody seems to be in charge. And that's why we have this colossal, complicated system in place that lets us down every year, day in, day out.
One of the things we've seen in the general transport scene here in Donegal, and I'm sure it's the same where you are as well and right across rural Ireland, is the success of Localink. And Localink yes. is a company which is providing rural bus services in places that never had them before. And more we're seeing Localink buses coming into Letterkenny from outlying parts of Donegal. And it's been quite clear and quite evident. Now, there's a way to go, obviously, before everything that's needed is provided. But they seem to be very much on the right road, if you'll pardon the pun, in the Localink service. Is it time to look at forming a company called Schoollink? And actually getting a private, not private, but getting a company that's run, that's owned, a semi-state or whatever, set up by the state to actually manage this, take it out of the hands of Busair. And as you say, Busair have an awful lot else to worry about between their own services and expressway and everything else. So rather than having Busair trying to get this resolved, take it out of Busair's hands, get a whole new system that we'll call, for the sake of argument, Schoollink, and actually create a specific body that will have no other responsibility than that for school transport.
Yeah, look, there's a really strong case for that, and we're very proud of Localink. It started way back in the 90s when Irish Rural Link members come up with this idea, which was poo-pooed by everybody. The only thing I'll say to you is, yes, that would be, it may well be the solution, but it needs to come about after, like, Busair are challenged. Are you delivering the free transport or just the school transport program? Are you delivering it or are you not? Are you ensuring that it can be delivered? Are you living up to the responsibilities of providing drivers, buses, infrastructure? Like, why isn't the buses there? So, yes, setting up another company may well be the end-of-game solution. But as you know, doing that would take a fair amount of time, fair amount of resourcing, and may even be seen as a waste of money. There is a national bus company set up by this government, by this country, running for many, many years now. They have been asked to run this service. They're not really doing it very well. And in my opinion, I would rather ask them why, because really, that's the beginning and end of it. And government has to take charge as to, if they're not doing it, then there has to be consequences.
Seamus Boland, CEO of Irish Rural Link, thanks indeed for this conversation and for sharing your perspectives on this really important issue. And hopefully we won't have to be talking to you again in the future and rehashing the same stories, that perhaps we will be able to see some improvement. But in the meantime, Seamus, thank you very much indeed.
Been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Seamus. Take care. The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We were speaking earlier to Susan Gray about issues on the roads. Caller says, I know a person who's disqualified in Northern Ireland, yet they can drive in Donegal. When are we going to see cross-border recognition? And there's been a lot of discussion on that in recent times. Another caller says, regarding speeding, given the litany of tragic road deaths recently, it's difficult to understand why the state hasn't insisted on cars being fitted with devices that prevent them being driven beyond the speed limit. This would have meant many of the recent deaths could have been avoided. We're told there's been a tweet by Vincent Brown, who speaks sense. Another caller concerned about their NCT. I received an email reminding me my NCT was due on the 1st of October. Went to book online, but I'm unable to get a test until the middle of January. Will I get in trouble for being without NCT during this time if I get pulled over by Gardaí? This isn't my fault, but I'm worried about it. Technically speaking, my understanding is you could, but I think in fairness, Gardaí understand the situation as it stands. What I would do is I would book the NCT immediately, and I would have the booking sheet, I would print it out, I would have it in the car, and if I was ever stopped, and I was in this situation myself in the past actually, where, and it was my own fault, I left it a while, thought, oh, I have a month to go, I'd better book the NCT, and then suddenly I found myself in a situation where I could only get a a booking 2.5 months later. And I literally printed out the order form and I had it in the car. And if ever I was stopped, I would say, look, I couldn't get an appointment. Here is the sheet that proves I have the car booked. And I think usually, in fairness, I think any guard that stopped you on the street would show, I suspect, a modicum of understanding of that situation. Now, we are going to totally change the subject because, and it's an issue we've discussed before on the programme, and it's the issue of menopause and, in particular, women in the workplace. A workplace survey on the impact of the menopause on working women in this country has been launched. Most recent census statistics show there are now over 1.06 million females in the state aged 45 and over. This means menopause for many of them is going to be an issue. We're joined by Loretta Dignam, who's the CEO of the Menopause Hub on Zoom. Loretta, a very good morning to you.
Morning, how are you?
Very well indeed. Loretta, it's something that, and it's one of those things, and there was an ad campaign ran quite recently, I mean, that menopause was the thing that was never talked about. It was always there, but it was never talked about. And it is, I'm sure, for many people, and I'm sure there are many women who are going to work if they are working externally on a daily basis, and they're trying to hide the fact that one moment they feel they're burning up and the next moment they feel they're a block of ice.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I set up the Menopause Hub, which was Ireland's first dedicated menopause clinic, just over four years ago. And up until that, there was nothing dedicated to menopause. And so we've a couple of clinics, and we're opening a third one in Cork. So we might get to Donegal soon. But we also noticed in conjunction that women were telling us about their experiences in the workplace. And what our survey says is that 70% say there's still a stigma associated with menopause in the workplace. And therefore, women are embarrassed. It's taboo. They don't want to be considered that they can't do their job, that their performance would be affected and so on. So don't feel comfortable talking in the workplace about this. In addition, a lot of females would have male bosses, some of them a lot younger, and they would feel also very awkward talking about this situation. I mean, I went through my menopause when I was in the workplace and before I set up the Menopause Hub. And I didn't dare mention it because my perception of a menopausal woman was someone much older than me. I was 49 at the time, thought I was way too young for menopause, to be honest, but was a much older woman who was maybe past it, over the hill, bit of a crazy lady. And I questioned, you know, could she even do her job? And if that was my perception as a woman, I didn't know what my boss's and colleagues' perception would be. So I kept it quiet because it was a negative association that I had in my head.
In terms of the experience, and I suppose it's one of those things that has to be said, that for every woman, it's going to be a slightly different experience. And there is no one size fits all description. There is no, I mean, I know two sisters, both in their late 50s. One went through a situation where they were like a thermostat that was gone completely wrong. The other was like, yeah, grand. And they're sisters, you know, and it was a completely different experience for the two. Now, as it happens, the one that was going through the very and she was getting the hot flushes, and I mean, there was times she would get 5-6 hot flushes a day. She happened to be working remotely in her own home, so she was able to get through that. But she said there was sometimes she had to sit there with a window open and practically put sort of frozen peas, you know, on her chest. There was other times when, you know, she was freezing, but she got through it. But she was able to get through it in the privacy of her own home, and she was able to do everything she needed to do. And that would include sticking her head in the freezer from time to time. But in a workplace, that's going to be far more difficult.
Exactly. So we do hear that from women. And I suppose COVID was the menopausal woman's friend in that she could control her environment, her circumstances. However, the only thing I'd say is that, you know, and I had 20 or 30 hot flushes a day, every day for 3 years, as well as night sweats and hot flushes at night. But I went on hormone replacement therapy eventually, which I was terrified of. But once I got the information and was able to learn that a lot of the information is myth rather than fact, that helped me with that. But just to say to anybody out there is that there's actually over 40 symptoms of menopause, and hot flushes is only one of them. Yeah. So women, everyone thinks if they don't have hot flushes, they didn't go through menopause. Well, the reality is that there are so many other symptoms out there, including anxiety, depression, insomnia, fatigue, dizziness, headaches. The list goes on. And on our website, the Menopause Hub, you can see a symptom checker with those 40 plus symptoms. And so that's just a message there. But yeah, so when women come back into the workplace, it's an issue for employers. And the whole solution for menopause in the workplace really is around reasonable accommodation and reasonable adjustments. So that can be made on an individual basis, because as you said, no two women's menopause is going to be the same. So therefore, they feel confident in going to their employer, their line manager, their HR department to actually, you know, request some reasonable accommodation or reasonable adjustments. But a lot of organisations aren't even aware of menopause or aware that it's an issue for any of their staff. And therefore, they're not ready for those conversations. So there needs to be education and awareness in the workplace. HR need to know, all colleagues need to know, line managers need to know. And we offer training for organisations in that regard. And we can help them develop policies and really move the conversation forward to normalise it rather than make it a stigma or taboo.
Does there need to be an assessment of the attitudes among line managers and HR managers and CEOs and those in the workplace? Because it seems there's an awful lot of information available about women, but there's very little information available about the attitudes of those they're depending on to give them those accommodations.
It's interesting because last year we did a survey with IBEC amongst employers. And what a lot of employers said is, oh, we already have a lot of things in place for menopausal women. And they may have, but nobody has ever, you know, called them related to menopause. So women don't know, and the employer doesn't really realise. But there are things that can be applied to menopause, except nobody was talking about that. And I would say it wasn't even that the workplace and employers and managers went out and said, oh, let's ignore menopause or anything. I don't even think it was on their radar either. It was barely on women's radar. But actually, I think what you're saying is absolutely right. And so I'll be conducting a survey next year where we will get the voices of managers and so on, and get the voices of employees, and then we'll be able to merge the data. But what I do know that organisations do want is more training, and they want menopause policy, and they want their managers trained. And I think that's a growing issue if we want to keep women in the workplace. 10% of women left work because of their symptoms. 40% considered giving up work because of their symptoms. We can't afford to lose talent at this particular age of 45 plus from the workplace. And this is often the time when women might be stepping into new roles, might be going for more senior positions, and they're actually stepping back from that. And that is the exact opposite of what employers want.
Loretta Dignam, the CEO of the Menopause Hub, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Thank you, Loretta. That's Loretta there, the CEO of the Menopause Hub. And I suppose really the most important thing right now is you have to have a situation where a woman is comfortable going to her line manager or CEO or HR director and saying, look, this is the situation I'm in. And if you haven't got that sort of situation going, then you have an issue. I'm going to take a short break. News after these.